Have you ever been to the Philippines? Manila, Cebu, the beautiful beaches of Boracay. Well, now's your chance because Philippine Airlines has an exciting announcement. They are launching their first ever direct flight from Seattle to Manila. That's right, I said a direct flight with the friendliest, best airlines from the Philippines, Philippine Airlines. They have the best service, the best food. They even serve halo halo. And we have an exciting announcement. Bainbridge Island's first ever Spring Asian Arts and Heritage Festival is being sponsored by Philippine Airlines. This means we are raffling off a round-trip ticket from Seattle to Manila, which will also include a round-trip ticket from Manila to Cebu, the beautiful Cebu. So if you want a chance to enter this exciting raffle, go to BainbridgeCurrents.com. And if you want to book your ticket with Philippine Airlines, go to PhilippineAirlines.com. Our festival is on June 1st, which is also where we will be announcing our exciting raffle winner. So go to PhilippineAirlines.com, and to enter the raffle, go to BainbridgeCurrents.com. See you there. Hello, citizen sister listeners. Thank you for tuning in once again. I'm your host, Stephanie Reese, and I know it has been a minute since I have released an episode. So a couple of updates. Sorry about that. I had asthmatic bronchitis, lost my voice. Nothing worse than losing your voice when you are a singer and a podcaster. But it is coming back. It's not 100%, but it's almost there. And so this episode is really exciting because it is my dear friend, really Denise Stoughton. Now, why do I say really, Denise? You'll have to listen to find out. Denise is originally a New Yorker who moved here to Bainbridge Island and found her niche market in none other than mailboxes. Yep, I said mailboxes. Super cool. She is writing a book about mailboxes and the different mailboxes that she's discovered on the island. And I know that sounds really funny and quirky, and it is funny and quirky because Denise is funny and quirky and beautiful and talented, and she's one of my partners in crime on the island. We are actually going to be doing a podcast, a sister podcast, called Tell Me Something Good. And so this is kind of a deep dive getting to know you of my friend Denise, her background as a club kid in New York City during the RuPaul era, no less. And I know you're also going to love this because co-hosting with me all the way over from Paris, France was John Florencio and Fred Belda, and all the way over from Germany, Mr. David A. Tobin, a crowd favorite. And so anyway, I know you'll love this episode. Oh, and shout out to the fact that we are launching the first ever Asian Arts and Heritage Festival on Bainbridge Island. Really exciting. If you would like more information on that, go to BainbridgeCurrents.com. Our major sponsor is Philippine Airlines. So we will be raffling a round-trip ticket from Seattle to Manila with Philippine Airlines on June 1st, which is the day of our festival. So again, go to BainbridgeCurrents.com. And so now, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, this is the extraordinary, beautiful, and talented, really, Denise. Hi, I'm Stephanie Reese. I'm a singer and an actress, and my career has taken me all over the world. And in my global travels, I discovered I loved a lot more than just being on stage and performing. I loved having conversations with people from all walks of life, different cultures, beliefs, different talents and backgrounds, and every time I found what was extraordinary in each and every person I took the time to speak with. From rock star celebrities, Broadway stars, soul singers, politicians, and everyday people like you and me, I'm bringing that to you here on Citizen Sister, where we have the conversations that help us all see how we are connected in the extraordinary and ordinary things in our lives, and how that makes us all citizens of the world. This is Citizen Sister. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Citizen Sister, the podcast. This is so exciting. Oh, my goodness. It is almost Christmas. I don't know exactly when this is going to air, but I just want everyone to know it's almost Christmas so that you can get the general vibe of where we're at and what we're doing here on Citizen Sister today. It is the most exciting episode for so many reasons. First of all, my co-hosts, David A. Tobin. Hello, David.
Ooh, hello. We're back again.
Yes, everyone knows you, of course.
So good.
And you won't believe this, but here on the island, last time you heard his voice was when we interviewed him in Filzmoos, Austria, Mr. John Florencio.
Hey, what's up, Empress?
And his partner in crime and our dear friend, Fred Belda, is here.
Hello, everybody.
All the way from Paris, both of them, and David from Germany. And my husband to the show is our engineer today, Matthew Coates. And we are interviewing none other than Denise Stone. And we're so excited about that because, so Denise lives on the island just like I do. Denise is also a fashionista just like I try to be.
Thank you.
And she is a lady of style, and also she is the founder and the creator of Uniquely Bainbridge, which we will get into in the episode, and the Kindred Spirit. And these are things that both these, things that she created have given so much joy to people on the island, even during the pandemic. It started during the pandemic?
Just after the pandemic.
Just after, which really is still pandemic, if we're being honest.
I know, but I think it must have been germinating inside all along.
I think so. And so for all of us here, I know that you've explained both Uniquely Bainbridge and Kindred Spirit to my co-hosts here, but please first explain Uniquely Bainbridge.
Well, it is a bizarre, quirky, fun project that got started when I decided to focus on our curiously creative mailboxes on the island.
No, she is not kidding. Bainbridge Island is quirky and all these things anyway, but yes,
I'm looking at the Instagram page, and it's so much fun.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. I'm looking at the Instagram page, and they're all quirky. And
cool. So, oh, sorry. And cool. I interrupted Denise, but keep going.
Sorry.
It was my fault. We're a little on crack today.
But you can really go down a rabbit hole when you get on the Instagram, because people are so surprised that this exists on Bainbridge Island, and they've lived here for years.
Yeah.
And I think the mailboxes have been a little bit overlooked, I decided to show them a little bit of love.
So were you on a walk, or were you somebody that was a runner or a walker, and you were like, gosh, that's a quirky mailbox. Like, how did it start?
Absolutely.
Right.
Walking my dogs.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's right. She has the best dogs, Johnny.
How many dogs?
Two chihuahuas.
And they're so cute.
Chihuahuas.
They are the cutest. What are their names?
Tula and Milo.
Tula and Milo.
So, and they fit in a mailbox, I gotta say.
Both of them can fit in one mailbox.
Oh my God.
So go on. So you were walking, was there one mailbox that you were like, God, people should know about this mailbox?
Yes.
Or was it a bunch? Which one
was it? It was a sinking ferry.
No kidding.
Yes, there's a sinking ferry mailbox in the Wing Point neighborhood, and I was walking the dogs, and I had appreciated all of the other ones I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
But it was that one in particular where I just looked at it and said, somebody did this.
Wow.
Somebody had a feeling about the ferry.
such a strong feeling that they made it.
They had some kind of feeling about the ferry.
Yeah.
And they decided to sink it. And I needed to know why. I decided I got to knock on the doors. So I just started knocking on doors, like randomly, just walking around, knocking on doors.
And were people like really, when you knocked on doors, because if you knocked on my door, but if you knocked on doors, people were willing to talk to you about their mailbox?
Yes. It was so fun because I was a little timid at first, and I was like, oh, my name's Denise, and I just love your interesting mailbox. But right away, people were so enthusiastic. Mm. They were like, come on in. It was like they were waiting for someone to ask them about their mailbox all along.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was because they put a lot of heart and soul into some of these mailboxes, and it's got meaning for them, which is what I've learned over time now. And so just to have someone to talk to about the mailbox is kind of fun for them. So I've been invited inside, sat on back porches and living rooms.
Oh, my gosh.
And in some cases, I feel like I'm part of the family now.
How many mailboxes? So, okay, the fairy one, and then what was the next one, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, so it was a Sunday afternoon, and I remember this perfectly because I went home. I was like, okay, I'm doing a book. I've got to find out about all of the mailboxes. So I took a picture of that one, and I put it on our Facebook group called Bainbridge Islanders.
Oh, yes. We're very
and
familiar with
these. I said, I would like to know about more of these kinds of mailboxes, and right away people shot pictures and sent them in on the thread, right away I got the Bob's Big Boy mailbox.
Oh, yeah. That one is huge. Hugely known on the island. You know Bob's Big Boy, the burger place?
Right, right.
Yeah. Where did that one come from? Can you tell us?
Oh, my God. All the way from Pennsylvania.
What?
Yes. The family is the Strom family, who's very well known on Bainbridge Island. Yes. They own Modern Collision, and they're really creative, and they love, love, love vintage memorabilia. Mm. They go all over the country to these huge shows, and if they fall in love with it, they will bring it back. It doesn't matter how big or what crazy-ass thing that it is. So they found Bob's Big Boy, and they had rented a Ford Explorer, so they strapped Bob to the top of the Ford Explorer and brought him all the way back to Bainbridge.
I haven't seen it. How big is it?
He's 6 foot tall.
Oh, yeah, that's big.
He's the real deal. So where's the mail? Like, he's there, and then is he holding the box?
Well, he's part of a vignette. So Bob's Big Boy is very 1950s Americana. So their mailbox has flames, like the hot rods of that era. And so it's a vignette with Bob in the background and the flaming mailbox in the foreground.
That is so, I mean, that's unique. Uniquely Bainbridge.
So unique.
So you love that when you saw it, but is it because, and I'm sure Stephanie will ask you about it, is it because you have a background in design that drew you to the mailboxes because they were so unique in design?
Yes, I'm a designer.
Yes.
An interior designer and a product designer, and I'm very visually oriented, and I also like to say that I'm an obsessive observationalist.
Interesting.
I look at every single thing in my environment all the time.
Which what you're really describing is that you are an artist. You are an artist. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
He's like, oh, we're tired today. Don't look at us. Don't look at us. Incidentally, we're tired today because Denise and I are also on the Arts and Humanities Bainbridge Board. And we had an event last night. That's why my friends are here, actually. And we did a home cabaret style, sold out, oversold actually, show at our house, at me and my husband's house. And John is, of course, as you know, a pianist, and Dave is a singer, and so we're a little tired today.
I know, but it was also worth it because the talent in this room right now and what you guys did last night.
Yes, the talent. This podcast is about you.
Yeah. Actually, it really is.
No, stop.
But I just felt.
Wait, finish your thought.
No. I'm having a love hangover right now from all the feels from last night.
That was very nice.
Thank you for saying that.
Great,
but
sir.
I brought it up, though, also is because. Like, there's a through line with art, you know. It's like, you said you're an intense observationalist, and that's what an artist is. Like, we look at the environment around us, and whatever we see inspires what we do and how we see things and what we create. And so has it made you more creative, and how has seeing the mailboxes actually inspired or, informed your art?
Yeah, I think for me, I'm also attracted to the mailboxes because of the kind of grassroots artistry, like the down-home effort of everyday people who don't otherwise consider themselves creative, but they got a great idea, and then they decided, well, I'm just going to give it a go. And maybe because it's a low bar, it's just a mailbox. You can't really mess that up.
Right.
And so they are so expressive, and they have a good time with it.
Yeah.
Now, is there a season when people do this, or this is like a permanent thing? Is there a contest?
No, this is just organic. This is what people have done all the time. And we live in a very creative area.
Mm-hmm. Very.
And so that's reflected in the mailboxes. So I think for me, it was just being able to pay attention to something that I did feel was a little overlooked.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it drew me in.
Let's do a deep dive. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, just a quick question. Now, how does a West Coast New York girl end
East
up...
East
Coast. East Coast girl end up in...
Bainbridge. Yeah, we didn't even go there. Denise is originally from New York City.
Yeah, so you went to school in...
We've all lived there, so...
Yeah. All the peeps. A guy.
Oh.
No, there was a boy.
We've all been there. That's what happens.
It's always because of a guy.
That's why I'm here, a guy. But I mean, that's a huge change. I know, we all know how, it is a really extreme change to go from New York to Bainbridge Island. Like,
I think you should paint the picture.
Okay? Yes, paint the picture. Paint the picture.
Okay, picture it. New York City. A young girl. Designer. New in the city. You're there. You're working for...
Oh, my God. You guys don't even know.
See? That's what we want to know.
We don't even know.
Okay, picture this.
Picture this.
Okay.
I was a little bit of a naive suburban girl.
Okay.
Who, at the time, would have been labeled Bridge and Tunnel.
Okay. Oh, so you were that, yeah.
Okay.
You know, not from New York. So I land at design school at FIT.
Wow.
I am in the middle of everything, you know, art students and creativity and the nightlife scene.
And by the way, Denise is so pretty and she's blonde and all the things and fashionable. So I can only imagine when you went to New York, they were like, hello.
The nightlife. Go on.
Yeah.
So... The nightlife.
I
am telling you, I was so fascinated about the underground hip-hop, house music.
Hey, yes.
Oh. Art scene. It was just like at the tail end of Andy Warhol. And
you're speaking our names.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Club area.
Tunnel.
Tunnel was thriving.
Better days, all these places.
Yeah, and so like a lot of the college students newly arrived, you know, I couldn't get into any club. You know, you had to wait outside.
Sure,
there was
a
big crowd and a velvet rope, and somebody would
pick you
or maybe not pick you.
Yeah, and you're like,
And you're just like, please pick me.
Yeah.
And so I decided, well, the best way to get in is I'll work at the club.
Yes.
That's smart.
I was a girl with a plan.
Yes, so, that's so cool.
Middle of the day, I went in there and I got a job as a cocktail waitress at the Tunnel.
Oh my gosh, of course.
Oh, I love the Tunnel.
It was everything. So I am being a fashionista, and back then it was really wild.
Yeah.
It wasn't about money. Everybody's outfits were DIY.
Yes.
Oh my
God.
It was
so creativity. We would go down a Canal Street and shop at the plastic store and just make up our own outfits. I mean, RuPaul was a friend. And
oh my God,
Delight,
that's so cool.
And all of these people
I love them.
Yet undiscovered.
Did you know Barbara Tucker there also?
No.
You didn't know Barbara Tucker? Okay, we'll talk later.
Okay. So this was the environment that it was. So I had a thing for slinkies. So I had this long hair, and I would take those little small slinkies and pin it on the base of my ponytail, and the slinky would go over my hair.
Oh, my God.
You had a look.
So I had this thing going on. So there was this Puerto Rican guy from the Bronx whose name was Giovanni, and he said, I am going to make you a whole outfit out of Slinkies. So I went to work to cocktail waitress one night in this, like, wild outfit made out of Slinkies and wire and
conical-shaped
boobies. And
oh, my God.
And Madonna stole your idea.
She did. She was definitely biting my stock.
I'm not kidding. I bet you she had people who would scope out looks. And then she might, you know, recreate them or whatever. That's interesting.
She did that with voguing. She did?
Yeah. Oh. But see, I think I was in New York at the same time, and what you said is so true, that those underground people were responsible for so much fashion, they never got the credit for it. But that was it. It was about creativity, and you were right in the middle of it.
Yeah, I feel like looking back, and a lot of people have characterized us as the original influencers.
Yes.
Yeah, totally.
And so I think, you know, all of the voguing houses from Harlem at the time mm-hmm. were so big, and yeah. that is where Madonna got the idea for that, Vogue.
That is OG.
Yeah. Like, what was the big movie from that time?
Vogue?
Paris is Burning.
Yeah.
Yes.
And, you know, Paris, who was in Paris, was my friend. Yeah, I knew Paris, right before I came to New York, come to Europe. So that time is dear to my heart, and those people you talk about, it's amazing.
It was rife with creativity, mm-hmm. and I just happened to be there.
Yeah.
So this night that I wore this outlandish outfit to just cocktail waitress, there was the Pied Piper of the Club Kids at the time. His name was Michael Alig, who went on to infamy later, and we can talk about what I'm not happened.
That's him. Another talk show, right?
Yeah.
There.
So, but
that's a movie.
Yes, that is a movie.
Yeah, it is a movie.
Party
right.
Monster. Yeah, we've exactly. all seen it.
Oh my God!
So Michael Alig just happened to be coming through. I was working in the main part of the club, and he saw me, and he literally grabbed me by the hand and dragged me into Rudolph's office. Rudolph was this club impresario who was managing the Tunnel at the time, and he said, Rudolph, she's too fabulous to work in the main part of the club. I want her in the VIP room only.
Hey, so drop the mic moment.
That only lasted a bit, and then I just started throwing parties at all of the clubs and stopped waitressing, and I think it was a month later I was in a fashion show at the club.
Oh, my
and
God.
And at the time, everybody had a moniker. Nobody used their real name. Mm-hmm, all the club kids, it was like Cynthia Socialize and mm-hmm. Michael Tron.
I remember,
just weird names. So I was going out onto the runway, and they said, well, what's your name? I really didn't have, like, a club moniker. So I said, well, my name's really Denise, and he's like, really Denise.
Oh, nice.
That was all he needed. That's all he needed.
And it just stuck, and I became really Denise, and I was one of the original club kids.
I'm never going to call you anything else but really Denise.
Oh, my God. That's such a great story.
Oh, my gosh.
So for me, New York was really a time in my life where I went from being pretty much a shy kid from the suburbs and kind of blossomed. Like, I was around so much creativity, not only in fashion, but in music and the skateboarding culture, the graffiti culture. They were all informing each other, house music and club life and art. At that time in New York, it was like a melting pot for all of that.
Yeah.
And I kind of grew up a lot in that environment, mm-hmm. and I came out of my shell.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
You know, which is a little bit of an understatement if you look back and see an animal those pictures of me at the time.
Oh, my God.
I say she was out.
Oh, my God. I love it.
But it was also, you know, a place of inclusivity, mm-hmm. I would say, and we had so many beautiful people from that time, from all genders and drag queens and
you know,
there was one, her name was Olympia, and she used to sleep over at my apartment, and I always knew she'd been there because there was like glitter for days
everywhere.
So cool.
Glitter never comes out.
No
it
and nor should it.
That's my favorite color.
Glitter.
Neutral.
Okay, glitter's a neutral. Okay,
it is. I'm in. Neutral. Oh my gosh.
So you're hanging out with these famous people. They're not famous yet. They would be famous later. And you're being influenced by all this fashion, all this creativity. How did that transfer into the next phase of design for your career?
Yeah, right. So yeah. I think it was an interesting...
Like evolution.
Evolution is a good word, because in nightlife, a lot of the club kids, I mean, we were on Geraldo and all of these shows.
I remember that. I gotta look. Are you on that?
Yes.
Oh, I'm looking it up.
Oh, my God.
But in the audience, I wasn't on the stage. But all of the club kids were in the first few, you know, seating rooms. And so, but we were, they used to say, well, what are you well known for? And in my case, I felt like, well, for nothing, just for going out and looking great.
but that's a talent. It is a talent. I thought so.
But in Paris my heart of hearts, I do. She says she's like a professional icon. Is how she describes herself.
Right.
So I had kind of veered away from my FIT life to be in this world, and I decided I wanted to go back and finish my education. So good. I got two degrees from FIT in interior design and a marketing degree for home
products. Holy cow.
So I finished that up, and then it was odd transition into a normal working world.
Yeah.
After having this
Did you
crazy...
show up ever to the office with anything slinky, like slinky inspired?
Or no,
like,
it was...
Like the meat dress. She goes in the meat dress.
First day.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'd like to think I was still stylish, but not outrageously so. So I just went into a whole, I morphed into this professional.
Wow.
Who's your inspiration?
Design executive.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Who's an artist that was your inspiration, you know, like in fashion or graphic arts or...
I don't know. It was weird. Like at the time we had...
a group of artists, designer. I mean, who's your, like, god, basically?
You know, we had, like, Patricia Fields.
Oh, Patricia Field store. I loved it.
The store. You know, we had Love Saves the Day. Mm. We had all these incredible stores in New York that I think I really gravitated more towards the underground. You know, New York City kind of style.
Yeah. Like create your own.
Yeah, like the do it yourself.
Which is like your, you know, I mean, the because you're an artist ultimately. To create your own was your expression of fashion without having to be informed necessarily. But I mean, it sounds...
We had Mugler and we had Vivienne Westwood you know, Stephen Sprouse and...
But they were probably influenced by you guys.
Yeah, because it was all happening at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it sounds like an incredible time period where art and life and club scenes and designers were all kind of like... being in form of graffiti, you're saying,
but they were living, they were actually living it. But no, that's what I was going to say, that they were living it. They weren't living it online.
Yeah,
they were living it in real time in life.
Yes.
They were out there doing it every night. A new outfit, a new club, a new experience,
or
a new theme,
recording, or
whatever. But that,
which is interesting.
Painting,
even locally. Like, I mean, I grew up in the grunge era, and I was like. It was so weird to move to the Midwest and have people be dressing up like what we, like how I grew up here. Like a flannel shirt and ripped jeans was not something you buy at Nordstrom. Mm-hmm. And then you go to the Midwest and they're like, you know, replicating a look from what you'd see on the Ave and University Avenue. I'm like, okay, this is really weird. This is actually where I'm from. And so it's really interesting how all of a sudden these things inform a bigger picture around the whole United States. Because I think what's really cool about what you're saying is that little scene in and of itself in Manhattan, like, trickled into the whole rest of the United States and the world. I'm sure you saw that in Paris as well, Fred. Yeah. You did what, like, when she's describing that time period, can you tell us, like, anything that reflected how that translated to Paris?
Ooh.
A little bit?
Possiblement, c'est de Queen.
What? No, but in Paris too, there was some a period where there was some club and there was such an energy different than what we have now. And it reminds me of when I was younger too and when I was going out in Paris. It was really a party. It was really something interesting to see. And now it's all flat.
The same.
It's not the same.
Yeah.
It was really a period where it was very easy to explore all that energy.
Right. And uniqueness was celebrated. You made up your own persona.
Yes.
There was these very distinct personas, whether they were drag queens or girls like me.
Yeah.
And we had a distinct dancers look, and it didn't follow anything.
Yeah.
It was just all made up.
That's so cool. So then from there, you went into the corporate world, you said. Did you, at night, did you still kind of like dip the toe in the club scene, or did you kind of go, now I'm a grown up and I'm going to do this?
No, I just did it cold turkey. I remember. Wow. And it was odd too, because I was used to getting photographed a lot and being in Page Six or being in Details Magazine or, you know, just
Details.
Having, yes.
Or interviewer, you know.
Yes, or interview, and just having a lot of attention focused on you to just like, you know, slogging along, showing up at the office every morning, you know, and it was odd. So I remember having one girlfriend, and she wanted to go out one night, and I said, sure, let's go. And it was still close enough to the time that I had been going out that I still knew all the doormen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I hadn't been out in a while, but I went out with her, and right away they were like, Denise, and the ropes open up, and I get in, and drink tickets pressed into my hand and VIP treatment. And my friend just looked at me like,
who are you?
What's going on? Like, the girl who sits in the cubicle next to me.
Oh my God,
that's amazing.
But, you know, that was the amazing thing about New York at the time. And I always say, you know, now we have the internet and we have internet stars and everybody knows them. There were people like you in New York that were New York stars.
Blazing the
day. Yeah, but that everybody in New York knew you, which was an amazing thing to happen and to live. And you once you have it, you have it. That's part of your legacy.
Yeah, I think so.
Yes.
And what I'm most excited about looking back is that at the time, like RuPaul,
yeah,
it was just one of us. You know, he came up from Atlanta with a whole group of people, like
Lahama,
Larry T, and they had this whole group of people. And in a million years, did I ever think that RuPaul would be so universally accepted and popular,
that makes me emotional,
and have a TV show and be the face of MAC Cosmetics or whatever has happened to him, and it's so well deserved. He is one of the nicest people you will ever meet. And
I met him once, and beautiful. Also, just you see someone on TV, and we just met briefly because of a common friend. But you see someone on TV, and it's so different in real life. When that's such a stately, tall human with beautiful skin.
And like, legs for days.
Oh my gosh.
Even back then, I would say to him, it's not fair that you got those.
Oh my gosh.
But what the great part about RuPaul and you is that you guys, you made it through that time.
Yes.
So many of those people didn't. You know, so many of them didn't make it. And you guys made it.
Yeah.
And are able to use those experiences to shape your life now.
Yeah. That's why I feel, anyway, that RuPaul's probably very grounded for these reasons. And I feel very grounded. I think when you've come up in that kind of atmosphere, and there was, we were underground. I know that a lot of the drag queens, it was a hard time back then, you know, especially in the meatpacking district and, you know, a lot of aggression. And yet, in our world, they were already celebrities.
Yes.
Wow.
We already loved them. They were our stars.
Yeah.
You know, they were beautiful.
You didn't need the rest of the world to say
no,
it.
No.
That's
but
so beautiful.
And for me, I am so, I think I'm very blessed to be sitting next to you, knowing all this about you. Because those people that you talk about, you know, Willie Ninja, all those people, they were people we looked up to. Because they had, like I said, style, and they had their own thing. And to this day, people are still copying their styles.
I know. And it's funny because the outside world didn't necessarily accept us. Yeah. We were probably like the freaks and weirdos, let's face it. But in art, we created a separate world where we had stars and style and personality, and you could just make it up. It didn't matter if you had money or not.
Yes.
And it was the one time in New York that I feel every strata, socioeconomic and otherwise, converged.
Yeah.
You would see these Upper East Side ladies out at night.
Wow.
Lady Baroness. We had all of these funny little characters. Mm-hmm. You could see Malcolm Forbes out at night.
Jeez.
Right in the same room with Debbie Harry.
Wow.
So everybody really did mix, and that was the exciting part, is there was a lot of accessibility and inclusivity at the time. I feel like we've gone backwards in some ways.
100%.
When I hear what's going on today, I'm like, why is this still going on? Because the time that I'm talking about is already, you know, 30 years ago.
Right. And it's interesting. I mean, first of all, I knew a little bit about you and Studio 54, and I did tell them ahead. But what's really interesting is I knew intuitively, I'm like, I want to do this interview with my crew, because I knew, like, you, this would be a perfect, like, match of energies. But also, it's just amazing to me, and something that David had said in a previous pod episode, that when we have these conversations with people, like, I've known you already for a couple of years, and I didn't know you. And it's a beautiful thing when we take the time to have these conversations to say, oh my gosh, like, the sum of who somebody is not given to us in just the casual hi and goodbye. And we need to take time, just like you did with the mailboxes, taking the time to just recognize something and go, hey, let's have a conversation about that. And there's a whole story.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. The history and the wholeness of you, I think, it's actually kind of makes sense as a through line, like, that you went through all of that, and that you, Denise, really Denise, can look at a mailbox and see what's unique about it and why it's special, and that it's informed from your history of recognition.
Because I feel that way about people.
Right.
Like, for instance, last night when I met you guys for the first time, and David, and I felt like we had some real moments, and there was a kinship, and you feel like, okay, these are my people.
Exactly.
And you don't always know right off the bat, but you have to take the time, you know, to talk to people, and with an open heart, too.
Yes.
And we don't always connect with everybody, right?
Yeah.
But those we do connect with, it makes us feel the world is okay.
Oh. Yeah. And seen sometimes when you don't necessarily feel seen, you know. Sometimes I think, I mean, one bonding point, I'm sure, though we've never talked about it, is coming to an island in a smaller place when you've lived a big life.
Yes.
Is really an adjustment. It's exotic the other way around. Like, oh my God, I live in this cool little place. And then it's like, oh my God, I live in this little place. And then, oh my God, again, like, back to all the things.
Yeah, you feel like it's your world's contracting, but you bring who you are to that place
and help it expand.
Therefore expand place.
I think your spirits make people kindred.
Yes.
You know, that's what...
Kindred spirit.
Yeah, you know, that's what happens here. Yeah, so...
Well, that's a good through line. So talk about kindred spirit.
I know. Well, please. That was a nice segue.
Yeah, it just happened.
And, yeah, I mean, even just talking to you guys, I'm like, yes, I do make sense. But sometimes you feel like, am I still just that weirdo? But,
no.
You know, then
yes, you are.
Well, yes.
Yes,
well,
it's amazing.
Which is a great thing.
But again, it's because I love people, and I love especially unique people and different things about people. Like, I get it. Like, clearly with my background, I get it. You know, there's nothing I haven't seen, heard, or, you know, been a part of. So when I saw those mailboxes, I drill down on those small little details, and then the stories of the people behind them were even more endearing, and I got more connected on the island. With kindred spirit, it's a little different. Yes, it's a mailbox.
Yeah.
But mailboxes represent a lot of magic for people, and they can be transportive in a way. So the idea behind the kindred spirit mailbox, which is not one that I made up. The original one is on Bird Island in North Carolina. Mm. And because I was knee-deep in mailboxes, someone asked me if I'd ever heard of it, and I hadn't. And I read the story where This woman in the early 1980s had a vision of a mailbox on a beach, and she made it happen. She stocked it full of blank journals, and since the early 1980s, people have been pilgrimaging to Bird Island from all over the country and all over the world now to just write in its journal. It's a very cathartic, healing experience for people. It's a beautiful beach.
Like saying their truth or whatever.
The stories in the mailbox are of joy, heartbreak, challenges, love and loss. It runs the gamut of human emotions. So you can go and sit at the bench. You can read what's in the journals. Ooh. You add your own story to the journal.
Oh my God.
So there's a real sense of...
Let's go. I have...
We're all in this together. And we all share the human experience together. We're not so different in that way.
Not at all.
So this story, I Googled it, and it just brought tears to my eyes because it was so similar to the stories that I'm collecting behind the mailboxes on our island that I want to share. And so I was lucky enough last year, I went to visit the original Kindred Spirit mailbox. And I read some of what was in the journals. And then because it's been there so long, the whole history of the journals are being archived at UNC Wilmington. So I visited the archive, and I was able to read even more, especially from the pandemic, where people really shared and had a lot on their minds. So I worked with the park department here on Bainbridge Island when I returned, and the park district said, yes, we would love to host a Kindred Spirit mailbox.
Amazing.
So earlier this year, we were able to install one in Upper Fort Ward Park, and it is absolutely beautiful. It overlooks the Puget Sound. It's on a bluff. There's two benches, and I stock it full of blank journals, just like the original one, which I consider now the sister Kindred Spirit. And I love the symmetry of two Kindred Spirit mailboxes on both coasts, each on an island, and Bird Island and Bainbridge Island, both BIs.
Beautiful.
And so
maybe
it's magical.
Maybe we could put one in France.
I was going to say, or Taranto.
Or in Italy.
Because he's dual in Italy and France. That would be amazing. We make it international.
I know.
That's the whole point.
Tell us how.
But people are using it, and I've been brought to tears at the park.
Would it be a dream for for the original person, or even for you, that is something that spread through, you know, different cities around the world?
And it is happening in different ways because Japan has the wind phone. If you've ever heard of that. It's a phone in a garden. It's connected to nothing, but somebody built it after the tsunami as a way for people to connect with their deceased loved ones.
Wow.
So you pick up the phone and you talk into it as though you were talking to your loved one.
Oh,
I just got chills. Whoa.
So all over the world, even this 2 years ago, a 10-year-old girl in the UK who was really sad about her grandparents having passed asked her mom, can we put in a mailbox at the cemetery? I'd like to write notes to my grandparents.
That is beautiful.
So in the UK, they now, I think, have almost 80 mailboxes in cemeteries. It's, I think, called the Mailbox to Heaven.
Oh my gosh. That is so beautiful. There's so much with mailboxes, I feel like, that we don't think about because people are saying, you know, with email and technology, it almost feels archaic, like sending a letter or receiving a letter or a card. And my husband and I, just this year, we finally were able to send out, you know, Christmas cards that we made with pictures of us and our dog and all of it. And I didn't even tell him this yet, but like, I've gotten all these messages from people just today, like, oh my gosh, thank you for your card. It's so cute and all this stuff. People I hadn't heard from that we sent them to. And there's something about receiving something that you can actually touch that, you know, is tactile, like you get to open it and somebody thought of me and put the stamp on and took the time is so different than an email. it just isn't the same.
And it's also something that's the person's unique handwriting.
Yes.
And the mm-hmm. card that they chose or the stationery they chose, it says so much about them and about the time that it was written in. The museum here on the island, the historical museum, says that we're in a digital dark age.
Yep.
Ooh.
And it's because of all the electronic communication that we're losing the written correspondence and those touchstones that are artifacts. They become artifacts later on.
Yeah.
The therapeutic healing of writing is huge mm-hmm. for songwriters, for people who write books, for people who just write a letter to somebody.
Yeah.
Just it flowing through your hand onto the paper.
Yeah.
Putting it in an envelope, mm-hmm. sealing it, and sending it to someone else in the anticipation of that person is going to read it and get it.
Right.
And I remember being a kid and can't wait for, I go back to mail. My parents and people got mail, but when you're a kid, you don't get much mail.
Yeah.
And I think, and you know, every once in a while, somebody in my family, I think it was my mom, she would just write something to me and send it to me. Just so I would have mail to open.
Because
I wanted mail to open. I wanted to be like all the adults. All adults had mail. Mm-hmm. They had bills. But I wanted something to open. And so when, as you were talking, all I could think about is that the therapy that is for people is so huge.
Yes. And that beautiful memory that you have of your mom doing that for you.
Yeah.
That alone.
Yeah. Or aunts. I'll tell you something about mail again. It wasn't a lot of money, but my aunt, her twin sister, would send me a birthday card. You could actually send money in the mail in America and they wouldn't steal it.
Oh my God.
You know, my aunt would send me $5 for my birthday in a card to me. I was so happy.
I know. That was major.
Email but doesn't do that, but a card for $5, it's like
leaving. But even an email with like a gift card is not the same.
It's not the same.
You know, you open.
And I think there's a way that you think differently when you're writing it down.
100%.
Your mm-hmm. brain goes through a different process, and there's more weight to your words because you're taking the time to actually write them down, and mm-hmm. I think we write differently.
Yeah, totally.
Listen, you can go to many places, famous composers, you know this, John, and you see their handwritten notation of symphonies.
How does they write so beautifully?
Exactly. Yeah. But
the calligraphy.
It flowed from their mind onto the paper. And they delivered it to all of us, you know. So it's something to it.
There's a magical element.
Or even when an architect puts paper to
you know. That's so funny you say that because my husband, who is here but not on mic, he said there's a whole handwriting thing in school for architects, and they don't do it anymore. Is that right, love? And it's such a unique thing because his handwriting is so I'm like, why do you write that way? And he's like, no, we practiced that. And I was like, God, that is so cool. And it's not done anymore in architectural school, right?
That alone, Stephanie, tells you what somebody did.
Yes.
Like, you could tell whoever wrote this was an architect.
Right.
Or a designer. It was so telling. There's so much about us that is communicated just through our handwriting.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, what we're saying
with
the handwriting. So there's layers upon layers upon layers of information that you're getting when you have something.
And then the box that holds these things, these mailboxes, become sacred.
Yeah, absolutely.
It becomes sacred. You're the carrier. You keep all these things, we write safe until they can get to the person.
I have all my letters and all my notes and cards and things.
Wow.
And it's really hard, though, to save everything.
I know.
And I'm always, told to just take a picture of it, and then you have it. It's not the same.
No.
I want to hold the paper.
But I feel to me, the whole postal system is like a living organism.
Yes.
And what we're sending are these little heartbeats, through the system.
That's good.
Sending
heartbeats. Write that down.
Okay, I'm writing it. That was so fun. I mean, this is so, so uniquely really Denise, this whole episode. I love it. We have questions that we ask every guest that we have on Citizen Sister. I've like adjusted them a little because I feel like a couple of my questions kept confusing some of my guests. But before I even go to those, I want to let anybody in our circle, because we never usually have this many people in the podcast studio. So I want, of course, anyone, like a question that you have for Denise, really Denise. I'm never going to call you anything but really Denise or RD from now on. Anything, co-hosts? No. Oh, it got really quiet in here. All of a sudden, people got shy.
Like, no, we really don't have.
No, I don't know. So, what is your next project?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Where are you headed artistically, and what do you see happening on the island?
Or beyond.
Yeah, it's funny because having been from New York City and now living on a small island, somehow my creativity has been sparked in such a different way here, mm-hmm. and so much more beautifully, mm-hmm. I think, and also I'm older, and so my perspective comes into play. So I know you can't plan anything. Mm-hmm. In life, you can try. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, I feel like I'm really on to something, and I want to finish the book, and I'm working on that now. Mm. And I trust that this is leading somewhere. I'm not sure where yet.
Right.
But the book about the mailboxes also includes the kindred spirit, also includes the importance of letter writing. So
beautiful.
It's a little.
Available on the website, all this information.
Yes, I have uniquelybainbridge.com.
Okay, uniquelybainbridge.com.
Yes. Please go
and
there.
We have information on.
Yeah, and we'll post it on the.
On Kindred Spirit.
Episode. And if you go on, if anybody listening goes on the website, sign up for the newsletter because I do a monthly newsletter with updates and milestones to this project.
Yeah.
And
perfect.
I divvy out little stories and happiness.
When I spoke to you last night about your mailbox project, I was in a conversation with Eldon, who's this gentleman of 90,
yes.
and he was raving about the book, and he's so proud of the mailboxes, and he's 90, and he's like, he stayed at the party
for all hours,
like,
because he's having a great time, and
yeah, he's a great fan of
Denise,
her work,
of really Denise,
So I want to finish the book, but I've already got all of these ideas, like yes, more kindred spirit mailboxes, mm-hmm. and yes, more cities, and go out there and kind of collect these stories.
And I'm going to invite my listeners, because I have listeners all over the globe because of my career, but I also just want to invite people to send you, Denise, pictures of unique mailboxes that they see from around the world. You know, because I think that would be really cool and interesting for you. And you're gonna be like, oh, why'd she say that?
No,
you're getting all this stuff.
Are
no,
you
but
kidding?
I want you to have that.
Yes.
Because it's, I mean, really, and also just the fact that you're a New Yorker, that you're well traveled, all these things. And we didn't have enough time to talk about all your travels as well, but we will, because I want Denise to also be
a
co-host.
Too. Yeah.
It does. And 100%. That said, really, take all of who you are in the grand. I mean, I think sometimes when we're on the island, like, not that we live small, but we're like, oh, the island, and we forget that who you are is expansive. And I think you bringing that here to the island is so special.
But Stephanie, can I say something about the island?
Yes.
There's something so special about this island that whatever creative people come to this island, it lets you refocus yourself on your art.
Wow.
It really does. I don't know if it's something in the water or in the air.
You mean less distractions.
Less distractions, that's part of it, sure.
Easier to park. No. I mean, I'm talking about just like these basic inconveniences of everyday life.
Yeah.
I think Bainbridge, you know, you guys are so, like, nice and cool, and there's no aggression, and that leads to
the freedom, the
quality of life. You know, like in Bhutan, they don't measure wealth, you know, like material wealth as the real thing.
As real currency, yeah.
As real currency, happiness is the real currency.
Wow.
Well, I'm gonna speak for myself. For me, as an artist, the currency is creativity.
Yeah.
Because I live from that. That's what comes from me. But whenever I visit here, and you have the privilege of living here, you are and Stephanie too, and Matthew, you have the great pleasure of being continuously poured into by this island.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you guys have a great situation here that you're never without. What possibilities exist.
Yeah.
And we talked a little bit last night, which I don't want to tell anybody to take any idea, but the possibilities that exist with what you're doing are, it's going to be your legacy.
Thank you.
Trust me, it's going to be your legacy, and I'm excited.
Know, when you say that, it makes me think of this word that I learned very recently, which you all probably already know, called ikigai.
Ikigai, yes.
I don't know ikigai.
It's the Japanese art of putting things back together again.
Well, that's something else. But ikigai is when what you're passionate about and what you're good at and what the community needs
come
together. It's like your purpose.
Wow.
So you should put that under Bainbridge Island.
Entirely.
So when that's all good. Of those converge, you find your passion and your happiness and your worth.
Yes,
do you think
girl.
You would have found that if you have never come back to this island?
No.
See?
Wow.
See?
No.
There's something. I just got chills. Me too.
Sometimes in these cities, there's a lot of noise.
Yes. Yes.
But when you come to a place like this, you can hear your own soul. You can hear things better.
That is so true. Beautiful. Because living a bigger life or traveling and all these things I used to do were things that made me, you know, I felt very fulfilled in that. But the chaos of that didn't allow me to actually do the left brain stuff of actual creating things that had legacy, for example, mm-hmm. or staying power. They were just projects that like flew with the wind and were in the moment and organic. But as beautiful as organic things can be, they don't help you stay, like create things that have staying power, create things that bring people, you know, together in a more informed way, you know. Yes. It's different.
Yeah, when I think of the creativity in this room, in all different ways, you know, musically, artistically, mm-hmm. I think we all know, and anybody who's creative listening knows, you need both of those things.
Yes.
You 100%. Need the interaction and the inspiration and feeding off of your fellow artists.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But then you also need that other space, that quieter space to let it all settle in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then create.
And nature. Mm-hmm. Nature all around us, which is another, you know, beautiful thing here. It just informs you of where we're really from, you know, the earth and like all of that. It gives you a spiritual sense, at least for me. And but yeah, I know we're going to have to do a part two, Denise, really, Denise, because.
Yeah, really, Denise.
Yeah. So we're going to do our deep dive. Oh, did you have something you wanted?
No, I just want to say I am inspired to design my own mailbox in France because somebody backed into our mailbox and destroyed it.
It was Fred.
It was a truck. It was me.
You found me out. That's what I go around doing at night so people can rebuild them more creatively.
You're getting outed.
So, yeah.
Yes.
They still owe us some insurance. Anyway, yeah. That so thank so you cool. guys. This was very cool.
Yeah. So really quick, super fire round of questions that we ask every guest and just first things that come to your mind, our citizen sister guest questions. Favorite food?
Pizza.
Nice. Pizza's very, very... we've had a couple people who say pizza. What is... Oh, favorite place to live?
Here.
Yeah, that's so good. And I'm just going to skip the... Well, no. What's one thing that you find absolutely extraordinary that maybe other people find ordinary?
Mailboxes.
There you go. Off the mic. Yay. And my favorite question, what makes somebody a citizen of the world?
If you're born and you're alive, you're a citizen of this world.
Yes.
Yes.
You need only exist.
That was Melissa's answer as well, my sister. That's a beautiful answer. Yes. Really, Denise, I am just, really, it's been an inspiring conversation, an extraordinary conversation, and I would love for you to come back and co-host, and I know everyone's going to want you back on here. Yeah. Thank you so, so much. We are so excited, Citizen Sister listeners. So follow Uniquely Bainbridge. And what's the what on Instagram?
Well, on Instagram, it's fabulous.bainbridge.mailboxes.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Thank you so much. And Merry Christmas, everyone.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy New Year.
We're okay. 4 days to Christmas.
Yes. Cheers. We had some festive spirits to help us with this conversation. Thank you, guys. And thanks to my co-hosts and my engineer, my husband, and David, John, Fred, everybody. And thank you, of course, really, Denise. Peace
thank
out,
you.
Citizens.
Peace out.
I'm Stephanie Reese. Thank you so much for listening to Citizen Sister. Find us on our website, citizensisterpodcast.com, and on Instagram at citizen.sister. Be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. It helps people find the show. Thank you so much.